Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Fistful of cash. Ladies and gentlemen, live from coast of the Carolinas by way of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, this is the moment sports betting fans around the world have been waiting for. It's time! Introducing the Fistful of Cash Podcast.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? This is the newest installment of the Tuesday Touchback here on the Fistful of Cash Podcast, like my man Bruce just said. But even sexier than Bruce, I got the co-hostess with the mostest soup. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. Watching the Packers and 49ers. Enjoyed a good weekend this weekend. Not our best weekend, but it was a winning weekend across all sports. Winning record in college, winning record in the NFL, the over 8.5 on the Bud Crawford fight.
Let's go.
We got NBA tipping off tomorrow. College hoops is 3 weeks out. Sports season's in full effect, man. And it's, I'm ready for NBA to tip off tomorrow, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be absolutely awesome. Before we get into a new sport, let's go over some of the stuff and the things that we are covering right now. Let's start with college football, if you will, because there was a lot of movement on Saturday, and there is a lot of movement in the standings now. You know, some of it was around games that we were interested in, other ones not so much. All the same, some of the games that we got right, Texas A&M versus South Carolina. Texas A&M was coming in at a -2.5. That was a good game. That was a good ball game.
Yeah, it was. I was honestly surprised. It looked like A&M was going to handle them there at the start of the game, but then South Carolina made it competitive and hung in there for the entire game. But that's why you – we didn't know. That's not the game we bought the half a point. Okay. So, yeah, there was A&M -2.5. They ended up winning by 3. So, hey, a win's a win.
Yeah. No, the game that you're thinking of that we bought the half point on was another one that we got, which was wild. It started out, it was dismal. And, you know, if you're watching the game, you're thinking it's, you know, you might as well just go ahead and rip the slip up and walk away. But that was Florida versus Vanderbilt. And Florida was at a -7. We suggested buying the half point down to 6.5.
Yeah, they started out 21-3. Got a touchdown before the half. And then Florida's defense stepped up in the second half and shut Vandy down. Felipe Franks played a lot better in the second half. They had a couple big plays. But, yeah, it was a big rally for Florida to actually come back and cover that spread.
Yeah, I was out and about. I wasn't watching the game, but I was getting updates on my phone. And hand up, I was one of the people that looked at that 21-3 score and was like, oh, gosh, man, did we miss that one by a lot? And sort of had written that game off. It wasn't until spending some time away from my phone and then coming back and looking at it that I realized, you know, that Florida had mounted a gigantic comeback, which I was thankful for. Some other notes from college football this weekend. We had a lot of top 10 teams. You know, I'm trying to tiptoe around it here. Georgia got handled.
Right. Jake Fromm looked uncomfortable going into Death Valley like that. Kirby did not have him mentally ready. It was a tough game all around. It's really weird. Georgia was manhandling them on the ground. They could not stop Elijah Holyfield or DeAndre Swift. These guys were ripping off 6 yards a carry like it was nobody's business, which is Georgia's offense. That's what they do. And then they got down 10 points and they got away from the run. They just started passing the ball, and it was weird. I don't know. I don't know what Kirby was thinking. And then passing the ball, just they weren't completing on third downs, and it just spiraled out of control really quick. That the fact that they dropped 6 spots from 2 to 8, that's – I know the rankings right now, they're irrelevant because it's really going to come down to who wins the SEC. But I promise you, if like Clemson lost or if Ohio State lost or Bama lost, they wouldn't be dropping 6 spots. It's very rare you see a team drop from 2 to 8, especially with the number 5 team losing and the number 7 team going down this week. So you saw West Virginia take the loss, and you saw Washington lose to Justin Herbert and Oregon. So for them to still drop 6 spots with 2 of the teams that were directly behind them losing is pretty crazy to me. Texas jumped up to 7. Michigan mollywopped Wisconsin. They jumped up to 6. But this just sets up a top 10 matchup between Florida and Georgia here in 2 weeks. So it'll be exciting.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of movement in the top 10. You know, like you said, West Virginia took a loss. Washington took a loss. Penn State took a loss. That's a lot, you know. And West Virginia just was disappointing from the opening kickoff. The line on this game was surprisingly close, and I was trying to figure out why it was, why the spread was sitting at what it was. I think last time I saw it, it was at West Virginia -4.5 or something like that. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, with Will Greer having the season that he was having, what's going on, in Iowa that people are so high up on Iowa State right now? And, you know, hand up, they came in and they took care of business. They handled West Virginia from kickoff to final whistle. It wasn't that competitive of a game at all.
No, it wasn't. So the thing with Iowa State and Iowa, they're notorious for winning at home against ranked opponents when they have night games. Like it's a thing in Iowa for some weird reason that they just play out of their mind on nationally televised night games when they have like top 10 opponents. I'm going to put this loss on Dana Holgorsen. I was watching the game, and through 3 quarters, Will Greer had 12 pass attempts. He was 9 for 12. And that's it.
Right.
How are you going to have, arguably the Heisman front runner in one of the most high powered offenses in college football throw 12 times in 3 quarters? And it's not like he was like Alex Hornibrook bad, where he was, 3 for 18. He was 9 for 12, and 2 of them were just throwaways because he was getting ready to get sacked. So,
right.
I don't know what Holgorsen was thinking. I don't know what that game was so confusing to me. The only thing that I expected that came true was West Virginia's secondary is miserable. They have no defense at all. But Iowa State looks good. They beat Oklahoma State last weekend too in a shootout. So that's back to back ranked opponents that Iowa State has beaten in the Big 12.
Well, Big 12 is wide open now with West Virginia losing. So is there a team in the Big 12 that doesn't have a loss?
No, there is not. So West Virginia plays Texas, not this week, but the following week. That's in Texas. And the winner of, well, if West Virginia wins that game, then the it'll come down to them in Oklahoma the day after Thanksgiving. It's a Friday night game after Thanksgiving. And the Big 12 has implemented the Big 12 championship game now, because there was a lot of complaints that, you know, they don't have two conferences or two parts of the Big 12. Now the SEC has the East and the West, and then you got the Big 10, how it's split up. The Big 12 doesn't have that. Everybody plays everybody. And it was always just the regular season champ was the Big 12 champ. Well, now they take the top two teams in the conference and they play each other again. So, I mean, from my estimation, we're looking at a matchup between two of the three, Texas, Oklahoma, and West Virginia. It's going to be two of those three playing each other for the Big 12 championship. And if someone were to survive that with only one loss, I'm sure they're going to get into the college football playoffs.
All right. Well, speaking of college football playoffs, that's going to bring me to my next question here. Let's go ahead and do a way too early college playoff Final Four. I mean, they've been jockeying position, you know, since the preseason, you know, all these guys on ESPN, all the talking heads and stuff like that. But I'd be interested after this weekend to hear your take on year four.
Yeah. I've got Bama's going to be one. Ohio State's two for me. Now, three and four is where it comes, where it gets iffy for me. I think Notre Dame is going to get in. I don't know if they're going to be three or if they're going to be four, but they've gotten through the hard part of their schedule. They've got, I think it's Navy at home, at Northwestern, FSU at home, Syracuse at home, and then at USC. So that road game at USC is going to be tough, but if they're undefeated going into that game, I have faith in Brian Kelly to get the job done. Clemson, I'm not sold on Clemson. I'm really not. And I could see...
I'm with you.
I could see Clemson taking a loss. But depending on who they lose to and how bad that loss is, if they still win the ACC championship, they might get in. They're looking at Florida State, which should be a win, Louisville, Boston College, Duke. That's going to be a good game. I'm interested in that game. And then South Carolina. So outside of Duke, I don't see Clemson taking a loss. So I'll go Bama. I'll go with the top four right now. I'll go Bama because they're going to win. They're going to win the SEC. I'm going to go Ohio State because I think they beat up on Michigan. And Notre Dame doesn't play a championship game, so all they got to do is finish undefeated and they'll get in. And then I'm going to go with Clemson. So I'll go with the top four in the AP poll right now to make the college football playoffs. Wild card. If I can't say Michigan because I think Ohio State beats them. This is tough. It really is.
Well, you mull over your wild card. I'll give you my four with my wild card right now. And I already know you're going to have some pushback on this, but that's okay. That's what we're here for. All right. So number one, I got Bama. Number two, as much as I hate to say it, Ohio State.
Let me give us the wild card before you just do your four and then I'll give us your wild card. I know who it is.
Okay. I know who it is. All right. Alabama, Ohio State. I'm with you. If Notre Dame can finish the season undefeated, they get in. And number four, I feel like they're going to win the Pac-12 and they're not going to take another loss all year and then sneak in. Oregon is my sneak in four, getting in with one loss.
So Oregon and then Oklahoma, those were my two wild cards. Because if Oklahoma can run the table and beat West Virginia and then beat Texas in the Big 12 championship and get redemption, they make a case. Oregon, you know how I feel about Justin Herbert, huge fan. I'd love to see them in. That offense is so much fun to watch. And your wild card is UCF.
Absolutely is, because if they finish the season undefeated after all of the media hullabaloo that happened last year, They have to put them in. And listen, I know you can – they don't play anybody. You can make the Boise State reference. I know you and I have talked circles about this before. But here's the thing. A lot of this panders to fan bases that are willing to spend more money. If UCF makes enough media noise, which they did last year with the national championship banner and the governor of the state declaring them national champions and buying them rings and the whole nine, if they go undefeated again this year, how can you, I mean, the media uproar that would happen wouldn't be worth the time that it would take to put them in and just have them get crushed by somebody. And then best case scenario, not even spin zone on the worst case scenario. So you put them in there against, I don't know, Ohio State or Notre Dame or something like that. And they get in and heaven forbid they win. Then you've got the ultimate underdog story. Then you've got Butler going to back-to-back, you know, NCAA title games. That's what you've got. So it's Cinderella story. That sells tickets. That creates headlines. That brings buzz into, you know, into the game. Look, man, UCF is a sleeper pick. They're going to finish the season undefeated. They got a little bit of a scare with the Memphis game, but they're still rolling. They're still rocking. They're going to finish undefeated, and it's going to be hard to deny. You know, it's going to be hard to deny them at undefeated. So they're my sleeper pick right now. I like Bama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oregon, and UCF is my sleeper pick.
All right, so I'm going to hit you with this. UCF's UCF's ranked 10th right now in the country.
Yeah,
at 6-0. You've got Oklahoma, Georgia, Texas, Michigan, LSU, Notre Dame, Clemson, Ohio State, and Bama all in front of them. Bama, yeah. Ohio State, Notre Dame. They're getting in. So you've got Clemson, LSU, Michigan, Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma in front of them. More than likely, right. Oklahoma or Texas is going to have one loss and win the Big 12. They are currently ahead of UCF. And to win the Big 12, they're going to have to beat West Virginia and then beat each other, one of them. So that's going to be two top 15 wins. So they're not jumping Oklahoma or Texas. Georgia, if they beat Florida, or if Florida beats Georgia, because Florida's at 11, either one of them is going to be above UCF in the ranking. So, and if Clemson doesn't take a loss, Clemson's going to be seven spots above them still. I don't see, I get the whole undefeated thing. Trust me. Call Kellen Moore and talk to him and talk to Boise about it. I get it. But when you don't, they don't play anybody. Like,
I'm not debating that. You heard me say you can make the art, you can make the strength of schedule argument. You can make the Boise State reference.
That's a huge thing when it comes to getting in. You have to have a strong schedule. That's why SEC teams get so much consideration because of their strength of schedule. That's why Big 12 teams and Big 10 teams get so much consideration because they're playing three top 15 teams a year. UCF's playing one ranked opponent this year. If they're still ranked. The last game, well, okay, they've got Cincinnati, who's ranked 20, one loss since he's out of the top 25. They've got USF, who's ranked 21. They're probably going to play one ranked opponent this year. I don't care if you go undefeated. If you only play one ranked opponent, you're not getting in.
Again, I'm not arguing any of the points you're making, but it's my list. They're my sleeper pick. And because it's my list and it's my sleeper pick, I'm saying that UCF's in. You can't deny the national champions from having a chance to defend their title. You have to allow it. That's all I'm going to say about this. I don't want to say anything more about it.
Okay.
Okay.
NFL football.
Yes.
All right. Like I told you, I was kind of right on the Jags-Dallas game. I just had what team was going to hang a huge number wrong. Oh my goodness, did the Jaguars get the piss beat out of them?
Yeah, you know why?
Why is that?
Because Blake Bortles is not a top 15 quarterback. That's why.
That's not it.
Blake Bortles sucks.
No. Yes, he does. Now, what it was they allowed Conor McGregor on the field before the game, and he put his Celtic Irish voodoo on the field. and you know, you get a good Christian boy like Blake Bortles out there, and he's playing on that pagan field, and he doesn't know what to do, and all of a sudden the Irish demons possessed him, and he didn't know how to throw a football anymore.
Right.
What happened was
he had a 29.6 quarterback rating. That's what happened.
You know what happened was is McGregor monstarred from Space Jam that football that he threw, and that's the one that they gave the Bortles and let him play with. That's what happened. That's what happened.
That throw McGregor had looked better than any throw Bortles had all game.
They looked identical because, like I said, McGregor inceptioned his terrible talent into Blake Bortles' hand. That's what happened. And the Jags defense looked absolutely exhausted because they were on the field for like 40 plus minutes. Yeah. That was just, oh boy, that was bad.
Yeah. I don't know what you expect out of a defense when the offense gains a total of like 200 yards. Goodness, 204 yards total. That's pathetic, to say the least. That was just so. Yeah, needless to say, Jaguars didn't cover the 3 points. They lost by 33. But we did hit Steelers. Kind of an ideal situation for me since I do not like the Steelers. Since he was up one, we took the Steelers plus 1.5. And then the Steelers ran an illegal pick play to get AB into the end zone. It wasn't called. BS. Should have been called. Shouldn't have been a touchdown. But Steelers covered. Tampa Bay almost pulled off the most ridiculous final play I have ever seen in my entire life. But DeSean Jackson couldn't scoop a ball up that was at his knees. So Atlanta covered those 3 points because Matt Bryan blasted a 56-yarder. To go up 5. What else was there?
Hold on. Let me go back to this. Let me go back to this DeSean Jackson thing real quick. I understand that, you know, he didn't make an effort on the ball. I'm not going to argue that. He didn't make an effort on the ball. But as that play was unfolding in the clusterfuckery that it was, I can understand having frozen feet because you're not sure what's happening. You know, the first pitch is missed. The second is bobbled. The third gets sort of thrown to you as the guy's falling backwards. I understand being like, not knowing what to do.
Oh, I'm not blaming him. I'm not saying it should have been a touchdown, but it definitely could have. If he would have been able to gather that ball, he was in the end zone. That's all I'm saying.
Even then, I'm not sure. I feel like he would have had to have been in stride because he was standing pretty still, and the defenders closed in on him pretty quick. It would have been interesting. I'll go with interesting for sure. I will say this: that was the wrong play call. I would have taken a shot at the end zone with a regular legitimate play. You have OJ Howard as your tight end. The guy is built like a freaking, you know, semi truck. Figure something out. I don't necessarily know that the Jameis Winston sneak shovel pass, you know, 38 lateral play into the corner is the right call there. But, I mean, I commend you on trying to win the game. I just don't think that was the right call, but I'm also not an NFL head coach. And I don't think – who's their coach? Dirk Cutter. I don't think he's going to be for very much longer either if he keeps us up.
Yeah.
So, all right. The Seattle game, London.
Yeah. I mean, John Gruden's little experiment is failing quickly. They're now 1-5. He's shopping around Amari Cooper. Rumors of shopping Derek Carr. This is the Raiders at its finest. They're in the same boat as Dallas until they get new owners, until they get the Davis family out of there. The Raiders are going to be miserable. Seattle looked good. It's as simple as that. They're bouncing back and they look good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll say this and it'll move transition from one right into the other. I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you did, but Paul Allen, the owner of the Seattle Seahawks and the Trailblazers.
He died.
Yeah. He passed away today. 65 at 65.
Years old. That's crazy.
Yeah. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Yeah. You know, I mean, many of people said it before and I'll say it now. Fuck cancer, man. That's ridiculous. Anyway, transitioning from NFL into NBA.
I got one more thing for NFL.
Yeah.
Those of you who stayed up late last night, you just watched, you know, a preview to the AFC Championship game. The Chiefs and Patriots are leaps and bounds above anybody else in the AFC. There is no question about it. The Patriots' offense is healthy. Neither team plays defense, but when you're putting up 40 a game, you don't need to play defense. You really don't. You're going to win games in the NFL. And New England will learn how to, you know, they play defense at the end of the season and in the playoffs. I cannot wait for this rematch. The end of that game, the Gostkowski kicking the field goal and leaving Mahomes 3 minutes, and then Mahomes hitting Tyreek Hill in stride for 75 yards. And then that final pass of Brady running the audible and switching Gronk from one side of the field to the other to get him in single coverage with no safety help up against a cornerback and not taking his eyes off him the entire, you know, from the snap until the throw. He never even tried to look the corner off. He knew what he had. What a pass. What a catch. What a game. That was one of the best games I've seen in a long time. It was, you know, an average NFL fan would have loved it. 83 points. Just offensive execution at its finest. There's so many weapons on that Chiefs offense. So many weapons on New England's offense. You could build a Pro Bowl roster out of these two offenses. It's unbelievable. I had to touch on that. That game was incredible, and I cannot wait. I'd say the Chiefs and Patriots are the two best, and then the best of the rest, you're looking at the Chargers, the Ravens, and the Steelers. Chiefs and Patriots, they stand alone as far as like an echelon of competition in the AFC right now.
Okay. Whew. I thought you were going to choke on your Brady fanboy there for a second. Listen, you really reeled it in there at the last second.
I gave Mahomes credit. I gave Tyreek Hill credit, man. They're just...
You get Patrick Wells credit. All right. Get to the NBA, man. Look, NBA season starts tomorrow. Two big games. You got Philadelphia, Boston. You've got the Warriors and Oklahoma City, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right. So we are going to cover NBA games on this podcast. We are going to cover college basketball as well. Obviously, with the frequency in which they happen, because it's not just a weekend thing, we are going to start throwing the occasional pick or two on this episode. But we're also going to put those up on our social media as well. So the picks will be on here, but we'll also post them on our Instagram as well.
Right? Correct.
Okay.
And we're also going to offer the different tiers for Patreon with college basketball and NBA starting up. There will be we'll cover it more in the Thursday episode when we have a little bit more time. We still have to look at how we're going to structure it and everything, but we're looking at something between, depending on, you know, the schedule and if top 25 teams play each other, or if we're looking at, you know, Duke versus Loyola Chicago. We don't want to pick those games because they're no fun. Nobody wants to watch them. we're looking at somewhere between 15 and 20 NBA picks a week and 15 and 20 college basketball picks a week. Obviously, they happen more frequently than football games. That's why we pick more of them. So there will be different tiers on Patreon. Tune in on Thursday. Once we get a set structure, we will give you, the cost for that and exact numbers on what we're looking at. But, yeah, we're going to have professional and college football and basketball going. So there will be more picks coming up on social media. Anytime there's a big Tuesday, because Tuesday's a big day for college basketball, we record Monday nights, so we'll cover a lot of college basketball on the Tuesday touchback. And then Saturday nights and Wednesday nights are big for NBA, so we'll cover what we can on Thursday episodes for the Saturday night NBA games.
Yeah. All right, so getting into that, the the point, we'll start with the Sixers versus Celtics. I'm getting Philadelphia at +4.5, and they're playing at Boston. So money line on that game is Boston at -195, coming back on the Sixers at +165, with the over-under being at 209.
Yeah, I like the Celtics to cover in this game. home opener against the team that you knocked out in the playoffs last year, when you were completely banged up and had nobody except for Scary Terry and, you know, a bunch of role players. This is the series that Jason Tatum really came alive, when Jaylen Brown really shined. The Celtics have actually beaten them 7 of the last 9 times that they've played. The Garden's going to be off the chain tomorrow night with the return of Kyrie and Good Hair Gordon, both going to be back on the court, man. That place is going to be wild. I'm not going against the Celtics at home in the first game of the season. They're too good at home. I think the Sixers lack depth. They're going to be without Muscala. They're going to be without Wilson Chandler. They're going to be without Jared Bayless. Zaire Smith's out for this. I know one of my preseason, I don't want to call it degenerate bets, but preseason picks as far as what I think could possibly happen was taking Embiid to win MVP. But it's going to be a lot for Embiid and Ben Simmons to handle tomorrow night. The bright lights are going to be on, and Kyrie and, you know, Gordon hasn't played since last year's home opener. He wants to play in front of this crowd. And I expect a very efficient, good game from Gordon Hayward. Probably shoot like 80%, like 9 for 11 or something like that, with 20 something points. The guy's just too good, man. Give me the Celtics at home to cover the 4.5.
I like the Celtics at home. I like the 4.5. I like your reasoning on the win. I think that they're going to use Hayward a little bit more sparingly, though. I wouldn't anticipate him playing more than 25 minutes this game. I don't think that they're going to use him that much. They're going to ease him back into game speed. They're going to ease that leg back into it. Recent interviews with him has said that, you know, he feels like he's at 90% return. Mm-hmm. I don't anticipate him going out there and just balling out of control. I would anticipate Brad Stevens knowing what's better for the player than the player himself and taking care of Gordon like he has his entire career, and, you know, just limiting his minutes initially, letting him get back up to game speed. But with all the weapons that Boston has, you know, going against what Philadelphia is bringing to the table, I still think that Embiid for MVP is a good play. That was one of our preseason picks. I think he can, you know, start his MVP season, the campaign for it anyway, off to a good start in this game, because he's going to be one of the few options that Philadelphia is going to have against this super deep Boston roster. I like Boston to cover this 4.5 points at home. So going from East Coast to West Coast, let's get into this last one here before we wrap things up. Oklahoma City versus Golden State. Golden State's coming in at -12.5. They're also, the money line's not even playable. There's no point in even mentioning it. And the over under is at 222.5.
Yeah, I'm going, I'm taking the over in this. Golden State, notorious for coming out and starting the season, just letting them rip from deep and shooting the lights out. We know that Oklahoma City, they lost Melo, but, you know, Paul George, one of the best two-way players in the game. Westbrook, he's going to go 185% every single play, especially against Kevin Durant. There's still bad blood there. I don't care what anybody says. You don't use certain words that Westbrook used against Kevin Durant if you don't mean it. I don't care what all-star game they played together and what alley-oops they threw. There's still bad blood between these two. Oklahoma City doesn't really play defense, and we know Golden State doesn't play defense outside of, like, Sean Livingston and Draymond Green. Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, give me the over all day in this game.
Yeah, I think with the Warriors, the safe bet is to play the over until it misses. I would just continue. I mean, even then, it's just, it seems like whenever they're playing, unless they're playing some real like defensive stalwart type team, which the league doesn't have any of those anymore, playing the over in a Warriors game, it's not guaranteed money, but it's probably 70% return. I would be anxious to see what the stat is on that. I like the over in this one. It's the first game of the season. They've looked good preseason. I think that they're going to come out, they're going to hang a big number. And like you said, they don't play good defense. So a motivated Russ, a motivated Paul George, I think that they'll come out. I see this game finishing somewhere around like the 120 to 117 mark, something like that.
Yeah, there's going to be I expect a plethora of points to be scored.
Yeah, I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a close game. I just think it's going to be ridiculously high scoring. I don't expect a blowout.
It's hard for me to. I won't ever bet against a blowout with Golden State, but I think Oklahoma City's talented enough to keep this game close.
I think until we see the chemistry with Boogie in there, it makes sense to just not assume a blowout's going to happen. 12.5 points is a huge spread for the opening game of the season. I don't like that. I think the over is a safer play here. I think the game will be closer than 12 points. I could be wrong, but until we see the chemistry with Boogie, until we see how everybody's gelling together, I don't think playing anything over 8 points is really that safe, unless they're playing somebody that's like absolutely abysmal. I think just the over is the safer play here. That's why I think that that's what our play is.
Yeah. So first two NBA games, we're taking Boston -4.5, which for those of you who don't play, have never bet basketball before. If there's a team that you like to win a game, so if you think Boston beats Philadelphia, but you're not sure about the 4.5 points, this has always been my mindset. As long as they're not winning on a last second possession, you're more than likely going to cover those 4.5 points because of fouls. You're going to foul guys. You're going to put them on the free throw line, and that's easy points. So that's one of the best ways to cover when you're taking a favorite who's favored by anything between 1.5 and 5.5 points. Normally when they have a 6 point lead, fouls normally calm down. But yeah, anywhere between, a half a point favorite and like a 5.5 point favorite, free throws are your friend when you are taking the favorite to cover the points. Just keep that in mind. I know basketball is not as popular as football, but, that's one thing that people don't really notice. That's one thing people who bet the underdog to keep it close get screwed over a lot of times.
Yep.
Is the foul trouble at the end of games, especially in college basketball, because you'll have kids down 13 fouling people.
Yeah.
Because they just don't get it. I don't know if it's a pride thing or what. They think they can pull a Reggie Miller or pull a T-Mac or what. But, you'll see a lot of crazy fouls in college. But as far as NBA goes, once it hits about 6 or 7 points, they normally, calm down on the fouling to extend the game.
Yeah, once it gets inside like 30 seconds, they usually
they'll
shot. If it's within 6, 7, 8, something like that, and there's a minute left, and then they're going to keep fouling. But, once it gets inside that. So, yeah, those are our first two NBA picks of the year, not counting preseason picks, which I don't know if you saw this or not, but Jamal Crawford to the Suns for veteran minimum, baby. That's what I'm talking about. I haven't bought a jersey in forever, but I might buy a Jamal Crawford Suns jersey. I'm just throwing it out there. Dude, Suns are a sleeper pick, man. What was our preseason? Over 28 games?
I think it was over 26.5.
Oh my gosh, they're gonna do yes. Yes. That's money in the bank.
They've got the roster. And Jay Smoove, Jay Crossover, that's a good signing, man. He's gonna play well alongside Devin Booker. Don't get me wrong, Klay Thompson and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, that's the 3-point team, but there's not that duo of Jay Smoove and Devin Booker, man. Those two can bang from 40 feet.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun to watch. I'm excited for that. That's a good signing.
Yeah, that's a real good pickup for them. I don't think that I mean, it just goes to show too that Jamal Crawford is not a ring chaser at all. He's going to where he can play and have fun and do his own thing. And I respect the decision to sign with the Suns. I don't know how well he was being shopped by other teams, but I imagine that any locker room in the world that he walks into, especially with how he has a rapport with guys around the league, he's a valuable addition to any team and any organization that he shows up and walks through the doors. So good on Phoenix for bringing him on. I think it makes, you know, I think it makes that team marginally more exciting. And that 26 games just looks like an absolute lock. Almost, you know, it's not quite the lock that our Nebraska under was, but
yeah, buddy.
Yeah, because that hit already. If you guys played that from the very beginning, that already hit. So that was, thank you for that, Scott Frost. Real quick, before we wrap things up, if you don't have anything else NBA-related, Soup, there's not much as far as MMA news goes for the week. The Fedor Chael fight, some people thought that fight was fixed. The initial left that put Chael down was a little, was pretty flush, but the ground and pound, it almost seemed WWE like. It was not very hard. It was not very flush. Chael was not rattled at the end of it. It was a little weird. It might have been veteran respect, but it was a little weird. Ben Henderson returned to form and then gave one of the most awkward. You know, you have Derek Lewis giving the best post-fight interview that you've ever heard. And then you have Ben Henderson, which he is known for giving just some really cringe-inducing post-fight interviews. If you haven't had the chance, I'm not going to play it on here because it's going to make me uncomfortable and I got to sleep tonight. If you want to gross yourself out and just feel uncomfortable for a couple thousand people, go ahead, find Ben Henderson's post-fight interview. It was really bad, but he looked really good in the fight. So that was cool. Matt Mitrione lost by getting wrestle death by Ryan Bader. And then Roy Nelson got slept by Sergey Karatanov in the first round. Fastest that Roy Nelson has ever gone to sleep in a fight. I think that iron chin is done. And lastly, MMA related, a little bit more of a somber note here. UFC veteran and Bellator veteran Bubba McDaniel, his son passed away this last week. There's a GoFundMe set up. Bubba McDaniel is one of those guys that has always worked a full-time job because he never made enough money fighting, but he has fought in every major organization around the world. Just doesn't really stay with him that long because he usually goes about 1 and 2 or 2 and 3 and they let him go. But he lost his 3-year-old son this weekend, which is an absolute tragedy. But there is a GoFundMe set up. I'm going to put the note or the link to the GoFundMe will be in the show notes. So by all means, want to encourage everybody to go there, donate, help him out. You know, stand-up guy, well-respected veteran, and absolute tragedy. So thoughts and prayers to the McDaniel family, his son Wilder McDaniel. So other than that, I know it's a somber note to leave it on, but we've got a big week coming up football-wise. We've got a big week coming up MMA-wise. I mean, it's going to be an absolute great weekend. So that's about all I got, Soup.
Yeah, that's it. Just an update. CJ Beathard is beating Aaron Rodgers right now, 24-20 at half. So, yeah, no defense being played in this game. He got 44 points at half.
What was the over-under on that?
46.5.
I think it'll cover. Okay, cool.
I think so, too.
All right, guys, until Friday, take care.
Yep, as always, guys, clear eyes, full fist. Can't lose.